Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 35 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Yeah. Announcements this week. We got a couple new photos from the Instagram account from Outlander Stars. The first one that we got was, it looked like they were a shot of them filming a scene with someone I assume to be Murtaugh, because I think I've seen him in that hat before, kind of leaning over Jamie, who is laying down. And it looks like they're trying to get a shot from Jamie's point of view.
Someone mentioned somewhere that it might be a reaction shot. It looks like a mic up in Jamie's face, not a camera.
Well, the camera's behind his head.
Yeah. So, okay, that's what I meant. Yeah. It's a reaction shot of Murtaugh or whoever that is.
Well, it's not necessarily a reaction shot. If it's them filming Murtaugh speaking, it's not a reaction shot.
Yeah, but it could be, probably is everything. It's his lines plus his reaction to whatever Jamie's saying.
But I wouldn't call that a reaction shot. I think it's more of a POV. It's just shots from all angles to hit it, and they'll edit it all together later. But it's interesting to see, because they've got him elevated off the ground, and honestly, that's the only way to get a shot from behind Jamie's head.
That's true. I never thought about lying someone down.
I mean, it makes total sense. Stage. Right, but when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. But I would never have thought, oh, let's get the platform out and put the camera behind Jamie's head so we can get this shot of Murtaugh.
And the back shot, which is all we have, of Murtaugh, the beautiful pleated great kilt. This is the first time we've got a nice close-up of that, I think. That it falls, like, in one piece. On the back.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see more of the kilts, like, they in the had show to, and the context and everything.
I'm saying just for the show to make it pretty, right? And I'm not talking about colors, I'm not talking about it can't be messy, but because those pleats are so perfect, if they're out running around, that has to be, for the show, for effect, it has to be sewn. There's no way.
It's very possible.
That they're doing that. I mean, I guess you could iron it into them, but, okay.
We saw a lot of kilts this weekend. I did, Elise. Did you look at the kilts? We spent some time at a Highland game this weekend, and we're going to talk about it next week, but I definitely spent a lot of time looking at kilts.
We were surrounded by kilts, and it was lovely.
And there were some that had so many pleats, that, I mean, they couldn't have been more than, like, a quarter of an inch.
I was glad you said the measurement, because they can't see your finger width holding your fingers apart right there in front of the microphone.
It was so tiny. It was the pleats were so tiny. I was like, wow.
And there were all kinds. All kinds of kilts and all kinds of kilt wearers.
And all kinds. And there was a random, like, Viking in, like, a pelt, which made no sense to me. That was it. And it was cold, you guys. It was cold.
It wasn't. Well, it got chilly towards the evening, but it was actually nice during the day, but it was definitely not hot or overly warm.
No, but as the day wore on and we got to the Kaylee, I was standing in line for the buffet dinner, and this guy must have been paid to be there. I don't know why else he would literally stand himself next to the line, like, propped up on a bale of hay, like, with one leg propped up on a bale of hay.
He didn't move?
No, he was like, ha, 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 like, making laughing gestures and holding a giant beer stein.
He must have been one of the paid
merrymen. He must have been. I could see no other reason for him to do this. But he was literally standing there. He had to be freezing, because all he had on was, like, a loincloth, like a pelted loincloth.
Oh, it wasn't even a kilt?
No, it was, like, a Viking helmet.
On his upper end?
No. My point is, he was very cold, and he had, so the Viking helmet with the horns, just, like, a little tiny, like, pelted loincloth. And that was it.
He looked freezing.
He probably had shoes. I didn't
notice. You didn't look down there?
I didn't look down that far. My eyes didn't go past the pelt.
Okay, good.
We also got a shot of a red coat. Our first red coat shot. I would say it's the first red coat that's not Menzies.
Yeah, I think we've seen Tobias at least once. Like, no, that. Oh, sorry, that was a screen still.
First Instagram red coat.
On Instagram. Yes, I'm scrolling through, and I think you're right. Okay.
So I do think it's funny that a pub meal. Made an appearance on Instagram.
Diana's, right?
Diana's pub meal. Chips made it on the Instagram account before a red coat. But anyway, neither here nor there. Recorded Books posted a new picture on their Instagram account. And honestly, I didn't realize they had an Instagram account until they tweeted this picture.
Yeah.
But it's a picture of the lovely Miss Davina Porter recording Moby. Very exciting for me.
I'm just looking stupidly at this photo. I love it.
Seriously.
She is Claire. I'm sorry.
She is. I'm anxiously awaiting. I did pre-order Moby, and then I canceled it. And the reason I canceled it is because I wanted to order the combo where you can get the discounted audiobook along with it, because Lord knows I love my Davina Porter. I love listening. So I canceled it, and so now I'm waiting until it comes out so that I can then order it and get my discounted audiobook at the same time. Diana Gabaldon also posted that we already knew she was done writing. But as of April 24th, 2014, 2:45 p.m., the writing is done. The copy edits are done. The galleys are done, which means Moby is officially done.
Then she says, she hashtags author just about done too. Hashtag time for wine.
We got a new How to Speak Outlander lesson, which was confounding, to say the least. Mostly because it was frustrating to know that we had it right to begin with.
Well, we had it...
Well, it was pretty close to right. We were pronouncing it very closely.
This is... Even though the official Outlander stars version of the word is this.
Right, but...
Which is what we said all along in the beginning. We've heard... Neither of them Gaelic experts, but one who has been studying Gaelic for a number of years since his youth, and the other who was not making it up for giggles. He was probably schooled on it by someone. Granted, there are probably regionalisms, and no two speakers maybe agree. But for the series, and I guess for the podcast.
Okay, but here's the thing. Bottom line, this was not a pre-existing word. Gaelic
That's
word.
True. And so, that might be why it's so difficult.
Right, which is why I think there are so many discrepancies between the pronunciations of the word. And the word, by the way, is Casaliach.
Yeah.
So, when we started this whole podcast, and before, and as I've read the books in my head, and when I've spoken of it to other people, I've always pronounced it Casaliach. Mm-hmm. Because that's, when I look at it, you know, having whatever languages I've spoken over the years, that's the way that I would pronounce it. That's where I'm led to pronounce it. Well, then we heard from Ron Moore when we were at the LA event that they were now pronouncing it Casaliach.
I don't know if he announced that it was called that.
It's not that he was announcing it. That's just how he used it.
To describe those images.
And because he is very versed in the
Outlanderverse.
In the Outlanderverse. And he's also, you know, very involved and very important in the Outlanderverse and in the production.
Just a little bit.
You know, I was prepared to stand by that. Sure. Because it's Ron Moore. Ron Moore's the one saying it was Casaliach. Mm-hmm. So we all changed. We shifted our expectations and recreated how it's pronounced in our heads. And we're, you know, living in that.
And it was difficult at first, I'm not going to lie. But now, with the whole thing that we made up of Leek Dune, it's quite easy. And now we have to go back. So I'm a little tweaked about that, but let me just tell you this. After this, and I know Leek is not mentioned too much in other books, I guess. Maybe referred to, but not a ton like it is in this one. This will probably not be a big deal. After this.
As long as they make the other series.
I'm just saying, don't change your mind.
Well, you know,
that's all I'm
apparently
saying.
They haven't changed their mind, and Ron Moore just didn't get the memo. However, that being said, Agav very clearly pronounced it Casaliach. Mm-hmm. So, that's where we're going to go with that. From now on, we will do our best to maintain
Castle Leach. And that was our How to Speak Outlander this week, which featured the lovely Mrs. Fitz. Yeah, I get excited every time she comes on. I'm like, she's so cute. You get excited over Annette Bedlin, and I get excited over Davina Porter.
Or we both get...
No, you get excited over Tobias Menzies.
That's different.
It's not.
It's a... I'm not going to say what it is, but it's a thing. Me getting excited by Davina Porter is because she's the voice of Claire, the voice of Outlander for...
But it's not the same.
What, 10
it's
years? 15 years now?
Because when I see... When I see Miss Fitz, Mrs. Fitz, because she always, she just looks like Mrs. Fitz.
She's like a little happy woman.
She's, yes. She's adorable.
She's adorable.
Well, Davina's adorable.
No, Davina's Davina.
Davina's divine. Divine.
Okay, Miss Divine. Okay, go on.
Anywho. We also got, there was a whole, like, question and answer segment on Twitter.
A Twitter Q&A.
Called
Typically Ask, has been done with Meryl.
I've seen Meryl do it a
and
lot.
And maybe once or twice with Matt
Leon. Roberts did a couple on it. Did they not do one with Ron Moore at one point?
I know.
I feel like there was a Q&A, but it was a while ago.
There was a Q&A. I think was Ron. It could have been someone else. But they asked us to send in questions early to tweet them. And that was for New York Comic Con. And they ended up taking one of ours. And that was Ron, I think. But I'm not sure who else was doing that with me. It was Ron and Diana, maybe? Because they're both there, so it must have been them. But I don't know if Ron's done one since then. We could be wrong, and I'm sure we'll be corrected, but I don't remember.
Well, regardless, this week they featured the Gaelic expert for the show, Agav. And if you want to find a complete transcript of that, it can be found at greatscottblog.com, which is run by one of our listeners, Mandy.
And also, because I know they worked together, so we can give a shout-out to both, Erin Conrad at 3F by Space. So both ladies worked really hard and really well together, and then they both shared that work. And then they posted it both places, I believe.
Brava. So that is it for announcements this week, and on to the read-along. So this week, we read Chapter 29. It was titled More Honesty. Just, I guess, as a precursor, this is the chapter where they justify spanking. Spanking your children is justified in this chapter.
I'm glad you clarified what you're talking about.
I mean, that kind of seemed like the through thought. The comical view of spanking your child.
So this chapter, if you remember the end of the last one, and Mrs. McNabb had just saved the day.
She's more than earned that granny status. She's no longer a missus.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's true. Chapter 29 begins. Diana describes a typical evening at Lallybroch with Jamie and Claire, Jenny and Ian, after supper, chatting about this or that, or listening to Jenny's stories. She apparently, although Claire goes on to tell a story, it kind of sounds like Jenny might be one of the family storytellers from what she says.
You know, the whole camaraderie between the two siblings... And then being the two married siblings out of the roof of their families kind of made me, like, wish that I kind of lived in that time period where, like, all the families kind of...
Family was it.
Yeah, and they were just all together and all, you know... And it's not unique, but it was so... I don't know, it was touching to me that because of how interwoven their lives were, not just Jamie and Jenny, but because Jamie and Ian were such good friends growing up, that they had so much shared history that, you know, that's something you don't have today, really, as much.
Not as often as it would have been, yeah. Diana's description of how a, quote-unquote, typical evening at Lallybroch, and as you remember, I don't know if we ever get an idea of how long they were there. It couldn't have been that more than a month or 6 weeks, because they were not too far out from the first snow. At least that was the plan, right? So, looking back, having read the 7 books, right? When Diana says a typical evening at Lallybroch, she means in that short period of time, a typical evening was spent doing XYZ. It makes me, as a longtime fan and someone who's, you know, read these, all the books, been in this world for 15-something years, a little while, you know, it is very, even though I know this is fictional, it makes me feel very nostalgic for them, knowing what's to come, and also that... For this bittersweet time that they had. This is a great time for them there because they're rekindling that. And Claire is getting to be part of the family.
And they're not on the run.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like they spend so much time as characters on the run. that this was such, and I'm sure we've mentioned this before, that's why I love this time at Lallybroch so much, because there was this like moment, this brief moment of peace.
Claire tells them about Granny McNabb and the Redcoats. So she tells them, and she has them in stitches. We learn that Ian and Jamie grew up with some of the McNabbs, and that also learned that Ian's father was a factor. And I thought, oh, what, huh? And I looked it up. A factor was, or is still actually, a property manager. Jamie and Ian were often in trouble as lads, and Jamie liked to try to talk his father. I mean, I guess you could say talk him out of punishment, but more trying to convince him that the punishment, corporal punishment, wasn't just for the crime or something like that. So, and it rarely worked, though one of the times it did, at least this is the only one that we know of, because he tells us about it, he convinced his father so well to, against a beating, that both he and Ian took, what, 5 days to clean out the entire Brock? They had to sweep and scrub 3 floors of this huge tower. And
well, it was like
by the end, they were just like, just beat me already.
Well, no, but they, it was funny. He said they had to sweep it top to bottom and then mop it bottom to top. And they said that by the end, one of them like hit the other one. Yeah. And then he was like, well, that was only the third time I broke your nose.
I think a second.
So just, I just loved how
they're back and forth.
Yeah. It's like those three characters know each other so well. Claire must just feel so out of place.
A little bit,
I mean,
yeah.
I know she belongs to Jamie, so she doesn't feel like she doesn't belong there, but it must just be like, you know, these three people have so much shared history that there's like, you know, she's just getting to witness all of this.
And after Jamie tells that story, Claire kind of sums up things that she's learned from them and says, okay, so the Frasers are stubborn, the Campbells are sneaky, the Mackenzies are charming but sly, and Grahams are stupid. And she says, well, what about the Murrays? And they say, well, you can count on the Murrays in a fight.
And you better hope they're on your side.
Yes. We learn that Ian and Jenny were married without Jamie's consent, but that kind of makes sense because she wasn't married before he was taken away, and when he came back, she was. So it had to happen while he was gone.
Not only that it went on without his consent, but that he wasn't around to get consent from.
And his father, of course, was
dead. And they didn't know where he was.
Or if he'd come back.
Exactly. Well, so he wasn't planning on coming back.
That's true. And he said, of course, he didn't mind it at all. And Ian's account of how and why they wed was very sweet.
I mean, but it's also so indicative of their characters.
It totally is. So he was out fixing a wheel.
No, he was working on a wagon.
On a wagon.
He was definitely underneath
the wagon.
That
was like stuck or had something wrong with it. He was underneath. And she's out there. She follows
like,
him, right?
He emerges.
And he's followed and he's covered in mud.
He emerges from under the wagon and she's standing there.
I hope they do this. I hope they show. Yeah, exactly. And he's
just like a bush covered in butterflies.
Yes. And he's covered in dirt, and he says he doesn't really remember what happened except that it ended up with him kissing her. Her kissing him. And then she announced that they'll be getting married on St. Martin's Day, and I thought, oh, that's lovely. That
I like that he said he argued with her as to why they shouldn't be married all the way up to when they were standing in front of the priest.
Yes. And he is so in love with Jenny, and he says he can see it's the same with him, meaning Jamie and
you
Claire.
You know, and there's this such a lovely line in that he says that Diana writes. Let me see if I can find it. He says, because he says, I can see, well, you know yourself, I can see it's the same with you and your Claire.
Yes.
She's something special, no? And then it says, she says, Jamie nodded. The smile didn't leave his face, but altered somehow. Aye, he said softly, aye, she is that. And I was like, I was trying to imagine Sam's face, and I was like, ugh, he's going to do such a good job.
Well, of course. So we learn that Ian's father, William, had died the preceding spring. So his death is fresh.
Yes.
And I don't remember that I caught that on my read last summer. Or at least remembered it. They reminisce about the time when they were called in to go with him, Ian's father, into a smithy to see how a wagon tree was fixed. And they were squirming because of the frogs they stuffed in their shirts. And he thought they had to go tinkle or something.
You know, it's stories like that.
And one
that
hopped
make me
out.
So glad that I have a little girl. I'm like, little boys are crazy.
So Jenny talks about Jamie as a baby and says he was very sweet and he slept with his thumb in his mouth and she'd never seen a prettier lad.
Which made him blush.
Yes. And he had fat, round cheeks and the dearest red curls.
And probably the longest eyelashes she'd ever seen because most little boys have the most beautiful
He was
eyelashes.
8 when he got his first thrashing and he said he remembers it. His father gave him 12 lashes, all of them strong. He did not let up even towards the end. Yeah. And he said when he was done and he settled down a bit, he said his father said to him, "It's the first, it won't be the last." And that I was thrashed, meaning Brian, said he was thrashed by his father, and Jamie's at least as stubborn as he, Brian, was. Maybe more. And he said he was all very honest. He said sometimes he'd enjoy doing it, sometimes not. But he said if your head thinks up mischief, your backside will pay for it. And he said, go let your mother comfort you. But when Jamie protested, he said, it's not for you, it's for her.
I'm going to go give my dad that speech in like 10 minutes. Just the part where it says, if your mind makes up the mischief, your backside's going to pay for it.
Yes. So Jenny starts in on how she remembered her father, adding on that Jamie waited for him on the way to the house and asked him if he enjoyed it. And he said no. And then Jamie answered, he didn't enjoy it either.
I should hope not.
And Jamie said, or she says, her father always said he'd be the death of him. And then the mood changes.
Well, I mean,
that was awkward. Sorry, I mean, I do feel, she was trying to make a joke, but then she realized, well.
Well, but then we realized that everyone is blaming themselves for Brian's passing.
And then Jamie's like, well, you know, it was kind of my fault, wasn't it? And Jenny's like, look. It was as much my fault as it was yours, if it was anyone's. She recounts what happened. This is the first time we hear her side.
Well, we hear the whole story.
In detail, yes. Of what happened the day he was taken. And Mandy wrote in, or just shared, very briefly, that she says she felt so bad for Jenny when she tells the story about Randall. And I do too, because she feels like, or I as a reader, felt that Jenny felt she had to get this out. I felt several times, if it wasn't direct from someone, you could feel the tension almost that people were saying, it's okay, Jenny. And she's like, no, I must get this out. And she, you know, she was getting...
You know what, though? This is kind of par for the course for her character.
She's good forward.
It'll come back later. Like, it happens. Like, she does things, and she's incapable of keeping things from people for long periods of time. Like, she has to, like, clear her conscience and get it out.
Whether it's for the better or not.
And it's
in
almost,
this case, it probably is good.
Right, but it almost never is in her favor.
So she recounts what happened with Randall. That when she'd gone up to her room with him, he'd seemed very nervous and flushed, as though he weren't certain of himself. She says he rubbed himself, and we'll leave it at that. And she stared at him, and he got angry and told her to turn around, and she wouldn't. He unbuttoned his pants, and she laughed at him. She has some nerve, I wrote. Randall was frantically doing stuff to himself down there, and his face was all red, and he didn't like it when she laughed, so she laughed some more. And he tore her dress apart on the top. Half off, she says. And she smacks him in the face, which I thought was the most audacious thing. And he smacks her back on the jaw. And he seemed to enjoy that, her being hurt.
He desperately wanted to follow through on his threats.
Of course he did.
Like, he tries so hard to be a
man.
He's
working himself to try to.
I know. That's my point.
And after she notices that he seemed to enjoy her being in pain after being struck, he was beginning to climb onto the bed, and she laughed again and taunted him. She took the size of her dress. She basically splayed, if they weren't already splayed, she splayed herself and taunted him with her womanly bits upstairs. You don't like that word?
Oh my God, you already said breasts. Why
I did?
Oh my God.
I never said that.
You're going to listen back and hear yourself say the word breasts.
I didn't say that. Anyway, she taunts him. What I wrote down was with her womanly attributes above the waist. She says to him that he could only manage it with beasts and young lads. She looks at his britches and laughs again. And then he starts to choke her, and he hits her head against the bedpost, and she passes out. And when she comes to, he was gone, and so was Jamie. And so Jenny has been living with this guilt for quite a while.
Well, she thinks it's her fault now.
Yes. And Jamie tells Jenny that there's nothing they could probably have done to stop Randall and likely prevent their father's ultimate death. Randall had been sent around the countryside to rouse the communities by his employer, whom they don't know who the employer is quite yet, to find out who might be faithful to the English or who might be against them come another rising. Jenny sees this all this while Ian's like sitting like stone because he had not heard this before. And Jenny sees that Ian is hurt and angry over this revelation and realizes that she maybe should have told him. And this is the first time we read Diana's words, "My own heart's blood." Jenny says that she'd lost her brother and her father, and the reason she didn't tell Ian was that he was more to her than family. She says, "I didn't want to lose my own heart's blood as well." At just about this point, Jamie and Claire leave the two alone. And that night in bed, Jamie is chuckling at a memory of his father. He's remembering the last time he beat him, and Claire's like, "That's funny." He asks Claire It is actually very funny. He asks Claire if her uncle beat her, and she reacts quite in shock and says, "Uncle Lamb didn't believe in beating children. He believed they should be reasoned with like adults." And Jamie says, "That accounts for the defects in your character, no doubt. Insufficient discipline in your youth." He was 13 or 14, tall, skinny, with spots, which are pimples. We learn that Jamie is ticklish, just around his navel, and Claire was almost tickling him, or was tickling him. He was 13 or 14 when he got his last thrashing, and she asks Jamie, "What will they do if they have children?" And Jamie is very philosophical. He says, "You will reason with them, and when you're through, I'll take them out and thrash them." And he describes his last thrashing as, he was bent over a fence and said that he could normally tell when his father was almost done, but he wasn't letting up, and Jamie was so determined not to cry out or make a noise, and his father kept on and said, "Damn you, Jamie, can you no cry out? You're grown now, and I didn't mean to beat you ever again, but I want one good yelp out of you, lad, before I quit. Just so I think I'll have made an impression on you at last." And Jamie was so upset, he straightened up, whirled around, and yelled, "Will, why didn't you not say so in the first place, you old fool? Ouch!" They have to do this. This is too rich.
Of course they have to do
it. And his dad clouted him on the jaw and said, "That's for calling your father a fool. It may be true, but it's disrespectful. Come on, we'll wash for supper." His dad, oh, and I wrote, this is what I did write down. I cannot wait. I know we have another book. First of all, we have Moby, which we haven't gotten yet. And then there's one more book. So I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because, yes, I want to enjoy Moby in its fullness for hopefully not 5 years, but maybe 5 years. And then after that, book 9. And then, but maybe in less than a decade, the prequel. But, oh, I think the story of Ellen and Brian is going to be magnificent. We already know spots of it. But man, she was a whoo. I think she could even put Claire to shame as far as being just a woman.
We shall see. So that, I guess, is that for that chapter. It was nice, short and sweet, which is good because I don't know about you, but I am exhausted from a long weekend.
a long, busy, fun, but long weekend.
Yes. So next week we will be covering chapters 30 and 31, Conversations by the Hearth. And quarter day.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young love came in.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.